Welcome to the Doggy Dojo. I'm your host, Susan Light, a Los Angeles-based dog trainer and behavior consultant on a quest to become worthy of the title Sensei of the Doggy Dojo. Today we're talking about one of my favorite topics, canine body language. Listen, humans are really bad at reading our dog's body language, and this leads to all kinds of misunderstandings and miscommunications. I personally think that this one topic could do more to improve animal welfare than any other. If we could all really understand how our animals feel, it would totally change the way we treat them, and it would put shock jock trainers, and that's in quotation marks, out of business. I've talked about this topic before with Lily Chin, who wrote one of my favorite and most recommended resources on the subject, Doggy Language. But I wanted to go more in depth and discuss some actual body language cues you could start to look for in your dog. My guest today is an industry leader and international speaker. They specialize in complex dog behaviors concerning fear, anxiety, and aggression. They are co-founder and head of training and behavior at Calm Canine Academy. Please welcome Karishma War. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. So excited to be here.
All right, we're talking about canine body language, which I think is such an important topic. Can we start with why is canine body language so often misunderstood? I feel like we are misreading our dogs all the time.
Oh gosh, I mean, I feel like we're misreading our dogs all the time. I feel like we're misreading each other a lot of the time. I just feel like we have a bit of a communication crisis in general, but especially between humans and dogs. And I think most dog trainers would agree that we're not really exaggerating to call it a crisis, because really I see so many humans who, just because of lack of understanding, are not able to see things that they want to see. And it's like you're saying before we pressed record, you said the most important thing we can do for welfare is to teach people to read canine body language. Well, I agree, because I believe everyone wants their dogs to be happy.
Yes, I agree too.
Right? And if we just gave them the skills to actually see that, their dogs might need support and be able to step in and see that resolution, see that reinforcement happen from that, that's going to be one of the best things for them. Anyway, back to the question. Why is canine body language so often misunderstood? Firstly, I do think we have some conflicting communication styles between the species. So lots of things that dogs tend to find a little bit intimidating or just naturally aversive or threatening, humans just do to try and connect. Things like direct eye contact, reaching for hugs and kisses, putting your face close to the other creature. These are, for humans, sweet, pacifying gestures of love. For dogs, often can be really scary. So I feel like we have this almost like clash at our core, where sometimes we try to come in and there's just a big miscommunication taking place. And then stack on top of that, a lack of accessible information, which is why I was so excited to come and talk to you today. Because due to an unregulated industry and the normalization of like aversive tools, I think that we are not really doing the public a good service of like teaching them how to read dog body language. It's not people's fault. The behavior is just not, the information is just not accessible to them.
Totally.
Yeah, would you agree with those things a little bit?
I completely agree. And you know what? What I find so interesting is that when I studied to get my first certification to be a dog trainer, they didn't even cover dog body language. You know what I mean? It wasn't even a thing that they talked about. And so I think when I learned canine body language properly and started teaching it to my clients, I think it made the biggest change of anything I can teach you. If all I teach you is to understand what's going on, you're immediately going to do better at communicating with your dog.
100% agree. And I just, you know what, speaking and just saying that out loud, that you were taught to be a dog trainer and not taught to read dog body language, really speaks to just how historically humans have notoriously poor listening skills. Truly, we do not really center listening and having a two-sided, like multi-directional conversation. And even when I learned how to train dogs 8 years ago when I first started, I was trained by folks who graduated from prestigious reinforcement based places, and I still didn't have all the skills that I needed to read body language, and I still was given this very like one directed way of teaching a dog, which is that I tell the dog what to do, the dog mm-hmm. does the behavior, and then I have successfully told the dog what to do and got what I wanted. Yeah. And over the last 5 years, I've completely shifted my whole communication style based off of learning how to read body language and learning how much they hate that.
Yeah. Well, and it's funny because I do have an episode about dog body language already where I talk to Lily Chin, who wrote the book that I'm always recommending to my clients, Doggy Body Language. And she talked about how sometimes the people who hire her are like the rabies people, because knowing dog body language prevents dog bites, which prevents rabies. Mm-hmm. And it's like, it's not a small thing to learn body language of another species if you're going to be around them. And we're around so many dogs, and it's just kind of mind-blowing. It's not more of a priority.
So true. And you would think that these sorts of things would be in school curriculums and all sorts of other things. And maybe one day it will be normal. Hopefully we're moving towards a world in which this sort of information becomes so woven into our culture that it is in the frameworks and our education systems and etc. But right now we certainly are not there, so all we can do is talk about it.
Yeah.
And try to give this information out to as many people as possible so that it becomes more of a normal thing. And every time we give this information to somebody, I'm sure you all agree, they come back explaining how much it's changed their life.
Yeah. And you can't unsee it once you start to see it. You can't go back to this ignorance that you had before. And again, we're not saying anyone is doing anything wrong when they're ignorant. We're just saying how pervasive the ignorance is. It's just crazy. But yeah, once we can open everybody's eyes, it makes such a huge difference.
Oh yeah, 100%. Have to double down on this. There's no judgment if you are learning every day. There's never going to be judgment for when you didn't have those tools, right? Like I worked professionally for many years without these tools. There's literally no judgment at all. And like I was saying, there are systems set up for us to not get access to this information. So certain people who have less, you know, privileges will also be more likely to not get access to this information. We cannot judge the individual just because they were not lucky enough to be given this information that should be given to everyone as part of a good education.
Yeah. And truly, I don't believe anyone who has a dog doesn't intend to love them and treat them well. And I certainly don't believe anyone who's taking the time to listen to a dog podcast doesn't just want the best for their dog. So they're here. Let's actually talk about some useful canine body language cues that, and it sounds weird because we're not a visual medium. So we're going to be talking about this and describing it the best that we can. And I'll definitely link some resources to some visual media that you guys can, you know, if you are really interested in learning more. But some of it, I think we can communicate this way for everybody.
I think we can do a lot through words. Let's paint a picture. Let's see how good we can do.
Yeah. So I want to introduce everybody to something that we call the canine ladder of aggression. And I want to use it a little bit as a framework for our talk today. And that word is scary for people. I think aggression, my dog's not aggressive. My dog would never bite anybody. And I just want to say, dogs are animals, and in some situations, biting makes the most sense. Okay. So when we put our dogs in these situations, every dog is capable of biting. So the canine ladder of aggression is really for us to see them escalate their feelings of not feeling safe, kind of. So we start with like the lower rung where, or we could start with feeling comfortable, right? Like the dog's happy, relaxed, comfortable. But then going up, we get to like things that we do tend to recognize, like the growl and the snarl and the snap and the bite. But there's so much in between that I want to talk about that most of us, until we study canine body language, are really oblivious to. We either think my dog's happy or my dog is very upset. But there's a lot of middle ground.
Huge, a huge emotional nuance. These dogs have an amazing capacity for feeling. So when we start to really look at the details, we start to see. And yeah, this canine ladder of aggression starts off with, I kind of think about it like a smoke alarm. So starts off with maybe the very light beeping when there's a little bit of smoke. And as the smoke fills the room, it gets louder and louder until suddenly there's, you know, the whole building alarm goes off because there's a full-blown fire. Well, that's what we're really looking at. So the subtle behaviors that you're talking about that start to indicate our dogs might be feeling a little bit funny. They vary widely. So I could literally sit here and just list behaviors after behaviors at you. I'm going to just give you the top hits.
Yeah, sure.
But we're looking often at things like if our dogs are.
Well, let's start, before we go up the ladder, let's start with a happy, relaxed, comfortable, confident dog.
You know what, you're right. Let's start at the beginning.
Yeah, let's talk about, because I always ask my clients, I'm like, look at your dog, how do they feel? And they'll make a guess. And I said, what are you basing that on? Tell me what you see that makes you think that. And, you know, this is the beginning of like, let's actually look. This is canine body language. What's happening in your dog's body that tells you this? Let's get specific. So what are some canine body language cues that generally, and again, every dog is different. God, their ears are different. Their tails are different. You know, some of them have docked ears and docked tails. Some of them have long fur and short fur. So your dog will be different than another dog. But in general, what does a happy, relaxed, confident dog look like in their body?
100%. So we're looking at ability to perform natural behaviors like playing, sniffing, resting, with a regulated nervous system. So specific behavioral markers would be things like loose, wiggly body language, relaxed musculature. Have you ever looked to see if you can see when your dog relaxes versus tenses the different muscles in their body? It's much harder on fluffier or like textured haired dogs, easier on the sleek dogs, but it's so fascinating to have a little look at those details like that. We can look at the really like facial features. Our dogs have an amazing capacity to express themselves through their face. So things like the eye shape, where they're looking and how intensely they're looking, where their ears are. I love looking at a mouth of the dog in great detail. And I have a poodle. The first time I shaved his face all the way down, it felt like we suddenly started talking because I could see the way his mouth was moving. So with a happy, relaxed dog, you'll likely see either just a neutral closed mouth if that's normal for that dog, but many dogs rest with a gentle open mouth and maybe like a regular panting, regular breath rate is something that we're looking at, so like normal rate of respiration. The details I can go into, shall I keep going? I could go into a lot
well,
more.
Well, I love this, but I do, when you said you had to shave your poodle's face to really see his mouth, it's such a good point. The popularity of poodles and poodle mixed breeds has created difficulty even for professionals reading canine body language, because there's a lot of subtle cues that are lost under all that fur in their face.
Could not agree more. Their face and, to be honest, the whole of their body. So I have a Moyen poodle, like a medium-sized poodle, who I didn't groom all the way down for the first few years. And we lived in Manhattan, and I always thought that he was kind of fine. And then this was also the first few years that I was working with dogs. You know, we don't know what we don't know, right?
Absolutely.
And one day I shaved him all the way down and suddenly realized how much more tension he had than I realized. And his mouth, what I thought was just an open, happy mouthed smile, was actually this almost like grimace. Exactly. Yeah. So the commissure, the sides of his mouth were really pulled back in this like joker like smile. His tongue was super tense. These are all things that I couldn't see with all that fluff around his mouth. And suddenly I was like, oh, buddy, we need to chat. Like, you are having feelings.
If you want to learn more from Karishma, they are on Instagram at Calm Canine Academy and online at www.calmcanineacademy.com. Through Calm Canine Academy, they offer many resources, including free webinars for a number of issues. I'll link those in the show notes. We'll be right back. So I love that. So, yes, there's a million things that we could say, and you will get to learn your dog's body language better, specifically when you're watching them. But part of knowing when they're relaxed, like you said, being able to do normal things, and then the absence of these other things that you're about to talk about. So yeah, let's hit those little subtle beeps going up the smoke alarm ladder of aggression. What are some of the first things that we tend to see when they're getting nervous? And people are always like, when I'm telling them these things, they're like, oh, that's bad, that's bad. You know, context is really important, I want to say, always. You know, it's showing that they're concerned or aroused, or, you know, it's not always specific to one emotion, but we can say they're not comfortable, maybe.
100%, 100% agree. And I love the term, the canine ladder of aggression, or the aggression ladder, because it's helpful to see how that behavior can become normalized, and actually how we often miss a lot of those low-key signs, right? But this is, we're not just talking about aggression. We're talking about any big emotion. Essentially, we're talking about nervous system regulation. How regulated is the dog's nervous system? Are they in a state where they're really feeling uncomfortable and desperately trying to seek something else to regulate themselves, or are they feeling comfortable? And I love this point that you're making about how behavior is super complex. We always have to look at that whole dog, the whole dog's body language, right? So I might see a wagging tail and think that dog is super happy, but only if that dog is wagging their tail in with loose, floppy body language and a relaxed face. If they're wagging their tail high and tight and they're leaning forwards and staring at someone, that might mean something different. So we're always looking in those two things, at the context, at the whole body, when we're thinking about any of these behaviors as we start to go up the ladder. Yeah.
I think, and it'll come up, but I do, since you mentioned it, the wagging tail and the grimace, which you've touched on already, I think are two of the ones that we tend to miss a lot and misinterpret. So everybody's like, oh, the dog was wagging his tail and then he bit me. I'm so confused. So just because the dog's tail is moving is actually not indicating that they're happy. And you're mentioning muscular tension. I usually try to tell people, like, within the tail is their movement. Is the tail wagging like a flag is waving, where there's movement within the tail and so there's, you know, relaxation? Or is it moving all as one piece, wagging only from the base of the body? And I call that a flagging tail, not a wagging tail. And that's a red flag that something's wrong. But if you're just seeing, oh, the tail's wagging, you're misinterpreting that sign.
I feel like we could just do a whole podcast episode on tails.
On tails? Know? Yeah, sorry.
The wagging tail, the flagging tail, the fishing tail, the helicopter tail. We have,
and there's something about tail, if it's going right or left, right? But that's, you're getting very left, complicated.
There's a lot of tail talk, honestly. We could go into that in depth. But I love that you kind of pinpointed out these common miscommunications, the wagging tail, the grimace. How many times have we heard people say,
smiling.
Yeah, they came right up to me. They were smiling and wagging their tail, and they bit me. These common miscommunications take place because a smile and a wag and an approach from a dog means a very different thing to a smile, a wag, and an approach to a human. Really commonly miscommunicated.
Yeah.
So we're starting to think about, are dogs starting to feel more uncomfortable in their body for whatever reason? There might be something going on in the environment. What might we start seeing at the early stages? Often we call these little displacement behaviors calming signals. There are many different pieces of terminology that folks use. In my head, I just have this imagery of the smoke alarm, and that really helps me feel understand.
I love that. Yeah.
Really, that's all I need to think about for me to kind of understand how they're feeling enough and be able to make decisions. So we see things like yawning, blinking, licking their noses. Maybe they'll do something like turning their head or orienting their body away. So we're seeing these like fidgety behaviors, maybe itching, starting to get up and fidget a little bit. And often these fall into the fight, flight, freeze, fawn, fidget category. And so at the beginning, we see like the fidget, the flight, avoidance, maybe. some signs of freezes could be the slowing down of the movement, their body coming in and tense and hunching over with the curved spine. We might see their paws raising in a kind of like frozen half step. So you're literally
Lifted paw.
A lifted paw. You're literally seeing the fight, the flight response, the freeze response, the fidget response. And it's the body usually seeking safety in some way. The fawn is another one that we might see. So we might see a dog doing excessive licking or approaching and sniffing or something like that. Even putting their going on their side for someone potentially. All of these behaviors that look often quite familial, like they look like a friendly to us humans, can actually be indicating emotions. Now, how many times have you watched a dog sneeze, lick, yawn, blink, shake their body as if they're wet, scratch? You're like, as if these all mean things, right? Well, sometimes dogs are just itchy. You're not wrong. Like, sometimes they're just itchy, sometimes they're just blinking.
Yeah.
You have to look at patterns of behavior. If someone just came into that room and your dog suddenly does a big yawn, licks their lips, blinks five times, and then shakes off, chances are they weren't just sleepy. Their lips were dry. They were itchy and they had dust on them all at that time. Likely it's related to the stimulus in the environment. So you have to track your dog's behavior, track data, and develop your observation skills to be able to pick up on these subtle signs as they relate to stimulus change in the environment.
Yeah. I do want to say, as we're talking about this, it's sounding really difficult. It sounds like really hard, like, oh my gosh, kind of overwhelming. But I do want to encourage people that it's not as hard as it sounds. Like, once you're open to watching, you will start to see these things. And like I said, once you start to see them, you won't unsee them. So if it's sounding like really complicated, like, oh, sometimes it means this and sometimes it means that, and I don't know, it will all start to make sense. You'll start to see the patterns, I promise.
100% agree. And you know, you're so right. I honestly am always a little bit, I find body language challenging to talk about because it's so nebulous. And for me, one thing that really helped, I'm someone with ADHD and it can be challenging for me to like take these concepts and then weave them into my life. I often pick one behavioral marker. So one thing, a yawning. I'm going to do yawning today or yawning this week. I'm going to look for yawning this week. I'm going to see when my dog yawns, or I'm going to look at when they itch and start making note of that. So if you're feeling like, gosh, there are so many different things, this is a language that you're learning. It is going to take you a minute. So be kind to yourself and break it up, split it up. And maybe just pick one or two things to look for. Or before we get into the details as well, is just to video your dog.
Ah, what a great idea.
Just video your dog and just look at what they're doing. Honestly, some of my best advice if you're feeling a little overwhelmed by any of this. And see, are they starting to, their ears move, for example, on the walk when they see a squirrel. Their ears come forward and alert and very like, pricked forward. Just observe it. That's all you have to do, is just note it. So we've got this kind of baseline for your dog, what your happy, relaxed, comfortable dog looks like. And then we have to think about what happens as the sort of smoke starts to fill the room, as things escalate. We might see some of those low level signs coming into play, the avoidance, the fidgeting. As things get even more smoky, this is often going to happen when those low-level signs are not listened to. So if the dog's trying to basically meet a need by turning their head away or freezing, usually it's a need for safety, a need for distance from the thing, a need for control. If that's not met by the low-level signs, they will escalate. So often this looks like an escalation in physical tension. So their ears might move back or forward depending on the breed, and the tail, the ear position, similarly to the tail, might come up and over the spine or untuck under. But we're just seeing a tightening, like a spring being wound up.
Yeah.
Sometimes we see the body becoming stiller and there being less behavior. In other cases, we see the body getting bigger. So my poodle Hera, an absence of behavior for him is there is smoke. the room is filling up quick. If he's getting still and not moving, I know that things are going to be not good for him. My Staffordshire Bull Terrier, Ash, if the smoke is filling up for him, if he's starting to get more and more dysregulated, he's like a cannonball. He's running around. He's smashing into everything. He has a big erection. His eyes are wide. He's panting and mouthing. So it really speaks to the variation within this species. It's partially why we love them so much. They have this incredible diversity, but acknowledging that it's like this coil, this spring being wound up, and depending on your dog, that will look like different things. So either this escalation, this freneticism, or this stiffening up, this kind of reduction in behavior. And this
which you staring. Had mentioned, fight, flight, or freeze, or fidget. So it's hard for us. We know fight or flight, but freeze and fidget are the two that you're describing. And I see that a lot.
100% I see. I mean, the flight is obvious, trying to run away, right? The fight is very obvious. Agonistic behaviors of any sort, barking, lunging, growling. The fidget, freeze, and fawn response. I don't know if everyone uses all three of them. Sometimes people combine the fidget and the fawn together. Do you have
I don't. I'm not as familiar with the fawn, but I have heard it before. Yeah.
So I mean, the fidget would be things like, oh, I just really have to go and sniff this piece of grass over here. It's just really important. And we've all done it. Like, you're approached at a bar by some creepy dude, and suddenly your Instagram newsfeed is the most important thing in the world. You know, a fidget to avoid and stay safe. We've all been there, right? I'm literally using a fidget toy right now to regulate myself while we're recording this podcast. The freeze, pretty obvious. And then the fawn usually looks like almost goofball like socially affiliative behavior, but with a kind of edge. So these dogs might approach someone, roll on their back, show them their belly. They might be a bit goofy. They might jump up and lick their face. My dog brings toys to people he's nervous of. I put that in the fawning category. I'm like, don't take it. He doesn't want you to take it. He feels weird. Look away. Yeah. From him. So that's really useful to think about all of them. I think it explains a lot of behavior that some folks get confused about with our dogs.
And I think it's great that you mentioned that. You mentioned before, like, approach. This is also such a tricky thing for us to understand, because if we think that the dog has come up to us, that they want to interact with us, right? So I think then people reach out to try to pet the dog and the dog gets freaked out. So that's something that we misinterpret. And I guess that would fall under fawn.
100% often would come, will be a fawn response, I find. Sometimes it's also like a almost freezy response as well. Like, they don't even know what to do and they're just being drawn towards the person, I think. But yeah, definitely can also be fawning. And one of the key miscommunications I think that humans and dogs have is that approach does not mean consent to touch. And that's something that we seem to understand for other humans, but we have not quite learned to extend that to the animals in our lives. And that speaks to deeper cultural conditioning and that takes place within human species in general, because it's easier for us.
Well, it's tough because we call them pets and we want to pet them, you know, and they're soft, some, especially, you know, the doodles, you know. But seeing dogs that are aggressive and bite risks because they've just been overhandled is pretty common, because people just assume they can handle them and they want to be able to handle them. But it's not always what the dog wants.
Yeah. I mean, and also many of them can tolerate it. They just won't love it. And if we start to notice those subtle signs very quickly, we stop wanting to do that, because we're like, oh, buddy, sorry, you feel weird when I do that. I see it happening all the time. Yeah. And there are some cases in which, you know, even the kind of stiffening up behaviors or the physical, like the big hyperactive behaviors, if they're not acknowledged and the dog's underlying need is not met, then things escalate to what we very commonly call aggressive behavior, like growling, snapping, and biting. very rarely will dogs go straight to growling, snapping, or biting unless they have a learning history that's taught them that all of those in-between behaviors yes. will not work. So often we see these dogs who have tried. They've tried negotiation. They've tried avoidance. They've tried the freeze, the fawn, the fidget. They've tried it all. It's not working. And so they just learn, well, then I have to go straight to growling or snapping. We also see in some cases a genetic predisposition towards this. So that can be something that can escalate behavior up the ladder as well as aversive training methods that punish the lower level signs of that smoke rising. It's like taking the batteries out of that smoke detector. If we have trainers who are collar correcting when a dog stares at another dog, or we have trainers who are pulling dogs towards things they're scared of, or even coercing dogs towards things they're scared of with food, we might then see these dogs learning, I should probably just escalate real quick because those low level things are not going to work for me, or I'm going to get actively punished for attempting to communicate that. And it goes back to what you were saying before about how it's not good behavior or bad behavior. A dog that's growling and snapping is not a bad dog. They're just communicating in the terms that
the only way we'll listen to them.
And yeah, literally, that's it. 100%, that's it. And once we start to see that body language, we have to go through a grieving period sometimes if we have dogs that have performed those big, big behaviors to be heard. We sometimes have to just really face that we didn't see it. I had to do that. I spent many years putting my dog in situations where he was stiffening, growling, barking every day. And I just didn't know what else to do, and I didn't understand. I just didn't understand, and that's okay. Like, that's totally okay. We all do the best of what we can with what we have, and amazing progress and change and transformation can be made as we start listening. You see the dogs start to go, oh hey, did you hear that? And they start to realize that those lower level signs will be listened to. We can get it back. We can build that communication back. And that's what the coolest thing about learning these skills leads to, is transformation, is healing, is communication. And it's actually a really beautiful and amazing and complex.
I don't think you could have summed it up any better. That's, you said so beautifully. Any other resources you recommend for somebody that's listening to this and they're like, okay, I get the base idea, but I really want to take a deep dive into this. What do you suggest that they could seek out?
Great question. I think the Doggy Language book by Lily Chin that you recommended or mentioned 100%. Earlier is fantastic. A brilliant first guide for folks. But to be perfectly honest, I'm going to go a little rogue here and unconventional. I'm going to say get on social media and start finding accounts who generate content with good body language information. We're on Instagram as Calm Canine Academy. There are other accounts like Tales of Connection or Dog Minded who really put out fantastic free visual body language content very frequently. Why not use it? Make sure it's reputable, you know, check your sources, but it's a fantastic free learning tool. And my last thing that I will say, other than the free resources and books and all sorts of things, working with a professional, your specific dog, where they can maybe not even in person. All of our trainers, we work 100% virtually, but we are watching hundreds of hours of footage of your dog on their walk, doing play, doing training, doing therapy sessions. So getting a professional's eye on your dog's body language in a program that centers giving you the skills to read them would be my last recommendation there.
Awesome. Thank you so much. This was fantastic.
Yeah, I've had such a lovely time. Thank you, Minerv. I always find body language a little bit of a challenging topic to talk about, but you really helped me structure it. So thank you so much.
Well, we could talk about it for far longer than we have today, but I appreciate it. Thank you for stopping by the dojo this week. This is your aspiring sensei, Susan Light, signing off. You can find me at doggydojopodcast.com, or I'm Susan Light LA on Instagram, Pinterest, and Facebook. The music was written by Mac Light. You can find him at maclightsongwriter.com. If you like the show, you can support it by subscribing, sharing it with your friends, rating it, and reviewing it on Apple Podcasts. Just a reminder, this podcast is intended for educational purposes only and does not constitute advice or professional services by either the host or any of the guests. I'll be back in 2 weeks with another new episode of the Doggy Dojo.